Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is therefore said to be the original cause of all causes. Thus, the spiritual abode of Lord Vishnu is eternal without a doubt, and it is also the abode of Mahavishnu, the origin of all manifestations. Translation responsibly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is therefore said to be the original cause of all causes. Thus, the spiritual abode of Vishnu is eternal without a doubt. And it is also the abode of Mahavishnu, the origin of all manifestations. Purport. Lord Mahavishnu, who is resting in Yoga Nidra, in the causal ocean, and creating innumerable universes by his breathing process, only temporarily appears in the Mahatapa for the temporary manifestation of the material worlds. He is the plenary portion of Lord Sri Krishna, and thus, although he is non-different from Lord Krishna, his formal appearance in the material world as an incarnation is temporary. The original form of the personality of Godhead is actually the Swarup, or real form, and he eternally resides in the Vaikuntha world, the Vishnu Loka. The word Mahat, Mana, is used here to indicate Mahavishnu, and his real manifestation is Lord Krishna, who is called Parama, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadya Adya Govinda Savakarana Karanam. The Supreme Lord is Krishna, the original personality of Godhead known as Govinda. His form is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, and he is the supreme cause of all causes. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Calculation of Time from the Atom. Omagyan timadandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam jena tasmai Sri Gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam jena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam Pancha kalpata rubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, the Bhagavatam is how many verses? 18,000 verses. And then how many chapters are there? 335, approximately. And how many cantos are there? 12. And the Bhagavatam is part of the Smritis, which means it is a Puranic literature, which means it is a history. So how many Puranas are there? 18 major Puranas and 18 minor Puranas in total. So the Bhagavatam is the essence of all of them. Vyasadeva was instructed by Narada to compile the Vedas, all the Vedic literatures. So he compiled everything. And then after compiling all of the Vedas, which means the Upanishads, which means the Shruti, or the original Vedic texts, which is said to be emanating from the breath of the Lord himself, then he compiled all of the histories, which is the Puranas, the Itihasas, like the Mahabharata, the Ramayana. And then everything was compiled. And the Bhagavatam was written as one of the 18 Puranas. It is said to be called the Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. But then it was written a second time. You go back to the first canto in the seventh chapter, the beginning of the seventh chapter. Chapters 4 to 6 of the first canto describe how Narada instructed Vyasa. And he said to Vyasa, "You look despondent. You look like you have not completed your mission. You're not fully satisfied in your heart. You need to write again and write a literature which is exclusively glorifying Lord Sri Krishna, the original form of God. And you need to describe the process of Uttama Bhakti, or pure devotional service, exclusively. This has not been done by you so far." So he wrote the Bhagavatam again, and the second time he wrote it, this is what we have now, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana. So this Bhagavatam, it exists on other planets also. It is in the heavenly planets, but in the heavenly planets it's a much larger version. Down here on Earth, we only have 18,000 verses. Hands up if you've read the whole Bhagavatam. 18,000 verses. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 devotees out of so many devotees. 20 devotees. Only 4 have read the whole. So that shows us that in Kali Yuga it's difficult to read a lot, to study the Vedic. Devotees have trouble even finishing the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is only 700 verses. And even that's difficult for the devotees to read. What to speak of 18,000 verses? On the higher planets, the Bhagavatam is much larger. It is millions of verses sometimes. So down here, we just have a condensed form. So we should study the condensed literatures, because everything has been condensed for us. But it's enough to keep us occupied. 18,000 verses, and we should study it. Prabhupada actually said one time, he said, "If I have one criticism of my disciples, it is they do not read my books enough." He said on several occasions, he said different things. Another time, Prabhupada said, "If I have one criticism of my disciples, they do not fear Maya." We don't take Maya seriously enough. How powerful she is, and how much she can bewilder us and interfere with our service to Krishna. So, Prabhupada said, "If I have one criticism, my devotees do not read enough my books." So, Prabhupada, he instructed all of us to read for 1 or 2 hours a day, his books. So we should be attempting to read Prabhupada's books for 1 or 2 hours a day. Hands up if you're reading 1 hour a day, Prabhupada's books. Okay. Oh, good, that's good. Maybe 7, 8 devotees, that's good. 9 devotees, maybe, that's good. So that was Prabhupada's instruction. Especially if you're a brahmachari, or if you're a brahmacharini, you have time. And if you're not reading Prabhupada's books 1 or 2 hours a day, then that is not very good. Because in the future, when you get into the dark well of grihastha life, that's how the Bhagavatam says. It's like a dark well. Right? You fall down the well, right? And now you're in the bottom of the well, and who knows you're there? Right? If you're in the middle of the field, you're walking through the field and suddenly you fall into the well, no one knows you're there. You're stuck in the bottom of the well. And now you're trying to climb out. Right? And someone throws you a rope. That is the guru. He throws you a rope. And he says, "Okay, come on. You grab it and I will pull you out." Sometimes we think the guru will just pull us out. But you have to hold the rope also. You have to do something. If you hold on tightly, then the guru, he will pull you out. But then sometimes it is said, the analogy goes further, you're in the bottom of the well, and underneath you, there are crocodiles living in the bottom of the well, and they're trying to grab you. And up above you, there are wasps, and they're coming to sting you. And then you're just hanging onto the rope. That's grihastha life. Grihastha ashram, a key. Sometimes it feels like that. Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight? Sometimes it feels like that. It feels like you're in the bottom of the well, and you're just hanging on, right? And from the bottom you're being attacked, from the top you're being attacked. And then it says up above you, they're not wasps, they're bees, and bees coming to sting you. And they have their hive, And then in the middle of all of that, right, you're hanging on, right? The crocodiles are trying to get you, the bees are trying to get you, and you look up and one drop of honey falls and lands on your tongue. And you're in the middle of all that and you taste it and say, so sweet. That is sex life. Grihastha ashram, you're suffering so much, but you get a little bit of sex life and you think it's okay. It is okay. It is sufficient. I can survive on this. And I will stay in the material world lifetime after lifetime. Bahu jamma kadiyadi shravana kirtana. You can just stay again and again. You'll just stay. I have sex life. It's okay. I'm suffering like anything. But at least I have a little relief. So then I will stay. And that's why we've been in the material world. Bahu jamma. Brahmanda brahmite kona bhagyavana jeev guru krishna prasade pai bhakti lata bij. It says within the Chaitanya Charitamrita that like a brahmanda, brahmanda means this universe, brahmite kona means we've been wandering around this universe. It is like being on a samsara chakra or a ferris wheel. You see over there in Port Melbourne and Docklands, they have the big ferris wheel. So that is what it's like. Sometimes you go down to the lower planets, lower species of life. Sometimes you come up to the top, you're a demigod, then you come back down. We've been doing this for lifetimes, just going around different births in this material world. And we think it's okay, I'll keep doing it because I get a little bit of honey, a little bit of sex life. So it's okay, I will tolerate it all. It's not so bad. But then we stay away from Krishna lifetime after lifetime. So, in this material world, you have to take advantage of the opportunity we have. Even if you're in Grihastha ashram, it is ashram. Ashram means ashraya. Just like there are 10 subject matters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. What are the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam? Second canto, 10th chapter, first verse. Right? It said there are 10 subject matters, sarga, visarga, like creation, sub-creation, the manus, ishanu kata, which means speaking about the Lord. Then we have liberation, and finally the 10th subject matter is ashraya. What does ashraya mean? Shelter. And who is our ashraya? Who is your shelter? Who is your ashraya? Guru Maharaj, very good. Very good. Who is your ashraya? Who do you take shelter of? Who protects you in this material world of suffering? No one's... Bhagwan, Sri Krishna, it's good. If you say Krishna, it's very good. Krishna, Radha Balabha. Radha Balabha are my shelter here in this material world. And my guru. It says in the Shastra, you should see the guru as Krishna, not in a Mayavad way, that your guru is Krishna, but you should see your guru as Krishna's pure representative, as non-different from Krishna. Krishna says himself in the 11th canto to Uddhava, he says, Acharyavan, what is that verse? Acharyamam Vajaniyan. Krishna says, you should see the Acharya as myself. You should see the spiritual master as me, as my representative. So that is our ashraya. Ashraya means our shelter. So Grihastha ashram, any ashram, but Griha, it's meant to be an ashram. It's meant to be a place of shelter where you can progress in spiritual life, where you can make spiritual advancement. That is the whole point. Grihastha ashram is not meant for sense enjoyment. That is not the function. Otherwise, you are Grihamedi. What is meti? Griha means the home. What is meti? It means like the central pivot. Just like if you get the ox or the bulls, you see in India and all around the world in the ancient times, they had the meti. Meti means like the grinding stone in the middle, the central pivot. And they would tie the ox and the ox would go around. So it goes around all day around this one point. So that is griha meti. Griha Medhi means you are just going around this one point. Everything is my Griha. Everything is my Griha. Just like I was speaking to some people that we're cultivating. And, you know, they're young and they own a business, supermarket, and they're building a new house. And the house is very big. We did a program the other night and they showed me the house. Huge house. You know, like how big? 44 squares or something. It's a big house. So a big house. And then I said, what are you going to do with all these rooms and everything? Because they're young, like, Grihastha people. He said, we're going to fill them up with kids. That's the goal of life. Right? Griha Medhi. Everything is just central. But we've been doing this for lifetimes already. How many kids have you... Count up how many kids you've had since you came to the material world. Right? And still you see in this lifetime, you can't live without another one. Oh, you know, people have... One of my second cousins, she's like my second cousin, she had a breakdown, like a nervous breakdown, because she could not have children. Her life was shattered. But if we philosophically look at it, not that these things are not important, we have to fulfill our material desires, that's an important part of our philosophy, but how, if you count up how many children you've already had since you came to the material world, right? Do you need another one? Not really. What do we actually need? Yeah, we need ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. Where does shelter come from? Krishna. That's right. But I'll extend that point, just so some of the women don't have nervous breakdowns. Because this is important. All right. You must fulfill your material desires. That is important. That's why Grihastha Ashram is a license for sense gratification. It is. It's a license. You can fulfill your material desires in a regulated way, right, in Krishna consciousness. And it is important that you fulfill your material desires. If you desire to have children, you should have children. Just like one of my closest friends, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu, Bir Krishna Maharaj, who is his wife's guru, he said, have 10 children. Right? And he started having kids when he was like 40. Rupa's about 50 now. So he'd be like 45, he started having kids. He said, have 10 kids. Right now he's had 3 girls. Right? And he's slowing down. I don't think he's going to hit the 10 mark. Because, you know, 3 is enough to take your energy. Like that. But, and actually he said to me, because we're very close friends, and he said to me a while ago, he said, you know, I'm thinking, should I have another kid or not? And I said, well, if you're thinking about whether you should or not, do it. All right? Just keep doing it until the desire is gone. All right? All right? When you've got 18 of them, right? And then you're like, that's enough. All right? And actually, it is our philosophy. It is our philosophy. If you look in the 9th canto, there was the pastime of Salbari Muni. And he was under the water, right? And he was practicing spiritual life for many, many, many years, thousands of years. But then, it was because of an offense, and the Bhagavatam teaches us, be very careful about committing offenses, because offenses can interrupt everything in your spiritual life. Because of an offense, material desires came up again. He came out of the... out of the river, the Jamuna, went to Mathura, met the king, and said to the king, I need to get married. Please give me one of your daughters. And the king looked at him, and he'd been under the water for thousands of years, so he had seaweed, well, not seaweed, but you know, weeds growing off him and barnacles. You know, he didn't look very good. He was under the water for thousands of years. And he said, I don't think any of my daughters are going to be willing to marry you. So then he changed his form, made himself beautiful, young and powerful. And then they all argued over him when they saw him. They said, no, I'm going to marry him. I think, how many was there? 50? 50 girls, like 50 wives. So then he said, okay, I'll marry all of you. He was so powerful. Right? So he married 50. And then he impregnated all of them 10 times. Wasn't it? 10? Yeah, it was 10. 10 times, I think. No, actually, it might have been more. Maybe it was 100 kids, each one. It was a lot of kids, right? Was it 100? Yeah, I think it was. So that's like 5,000 kids. That's 5,000 kids. So impregnates 50 of them, 100 times. It was 10 or 100, I can't remember. I think it might have even been. Either way, you know, 500 or 5,000, that's enough. So what is the point? The point is he got it out of his system, right? And then he became peaceful again, right? He said, now I'm finished with it. And then he went back to spiritual life, and it said that he liberated himself. He got out of the material world. So it's very important that you must fulfill your material desires. If you have desires, you must fulfill them, but it must be regulated. That's the point. That's our system. Krishna says, Chaturvarnam, Maya Shristam, Guna Kama, Vibhagashaha. Chaturvarna. He said, I give you four varnas, four ashrams. Krishna says this in the Gita, because he knows we are conditioned souls. Don't try to act like a liberated soul when you're a conditioned soul. Right? If you don't understand you're a conditioned soul, you don't get out of the material world. Right? My spiritual master said on a lecture, I've mentioned this a number of times, 1996, I was traveling by myself, distributing books, and then I was listening to a lecture one morning, and I was a brahmachari still. And he said, on the lecture, he said, if you don't understand you're in the material world, you won't get out of the material world. And then so I heard that, I thought, wow. And that just, it changed my whole life, that one sentence. Because I realized I have material desires. And then within 12 months, I got married. Right? And started to, in a regulated way, satisfy my material desires. Right? And that is the system. Right? And then we can satisfy our material desires. And what is the good thing about satisfying your material desires in a regulated way? It purifies you. Why does it purify you? What is it? Yeah, you have to do it Krishna's way. Yeah. Yeah, that's the point. Yeah. The point is that you satisfy your desires in a regulated way, but then you realize it's not that good anyway. It's not funny, but it is humorous when you're an older devotee and you watch all the younger devotees, right? And they're all like, oh, I've got to get married, and they're going totally crazy, and, you know, oh, I've got to get married, and then they get married, and then a year later, they're all like, oh, why did I get married? So you try to fulfill your material desires, but the nature of the material energy is the material energy cannot make you happy. So it is a perfect system that Krishna gives us. Right? Fulfill your material desires in a regulated way, but by doing that, you'll lose all of your taste for the material energy because you realize it's not that great. Right? Just keep having kids, and eventually you'll just realize it's not that great. You know, like we were in the supermarket the other day, and one of these kids was having a tantrum. You know, and it's such an education, you know, to watch a kid having a tantrum in a public place. And the parents watching the kid, they're about 20 feet away, and the kid's in the middle of the supermarket laying on his back, screaming and crying, I like that. Because it couldn't get a box of Cocoa Pops or something like that. And it shows you what the material energy is like. You know, he thought, I'll have kids, it'll make me satisfied, and it completely challenges you. So, it is said the Bhagavatam is meant to give us Ashraya. This is actually the Ashraya. And the actual system of purification, right, in any ashram, is taking shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam is our actual Ashraya. Therefore, it is says in the Bhagavatam, Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. What does that mean? Yeah, it means every day. What does Nitya mean? Yeah, perpetual, eternal, regularly. Nitya. Nityam Bhagavata. And it's symbolic, actually. It's also mentioned by the Acharyas. That why did the Bhagavatam get spoken in 7 days? Why not 8 days or 6 days? Or why did it take 7 days to speak the Bhagavatam? Because it's symbolic. It's teaching us we should hear the Bhagavatam every day. Hands up if you hear the Bhagavatam every day. Good. Nearly everyone. That's good. See, I live in a situation. I live in the forest. I live in the forest. I actually do. I live in the forest. So I live in the forest, away from civilization, which has many advantages, has challenges also, but has many advantages. So therefore, I don't have regular Bhagavatam classes every day. You know, it's like here, you know, for 7 years I lived, 8 years I lived in the ashram as a brahmachari, so every day I could just walk in, walk out. Bhagavatam's there, right? And then, 7 years I lived behind, a little page street, 200 meters from here, as a grihastha. Walk in, walk out. Every day I could just go to Bhagavatam class, much as I want. And now I live in the forest and there's no Bhagavatam class. There's some days I just walk around, you know, looking for the Bhagavatam class, but there's no Bhagavatam class. Where is it? Is it on the side of the cow shed? Is it next to the creek? You know, I walk around, it's not there. But every day, pretty much, not every single day, but pretty much every day, I listen to the Bhagavatam. I listen to lectures. I listen, right? As soon as I get up in the morning, first thing I do, right? I get my MP3 player, and then I turn it on, and I'm brushing my teeth, right? And I listen, right, to lectures. I've been doing that for, you know, like 25 years, just listening. So, every day, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, because that is our ashraya. Ashraya means our shelter in this material world. Right? Because we must take shelter of Krishna, because there's no other shelter in this material world. The material world is fallible, and it will let you down in every single way. What does the Bhagavatam say? What is that verse? How does it begin? Deha pacha kalatra dishu atmasanyeshu asatswapi. Deha. What does deha mean? Dehinos mean yatale. Deha means your body. Does your body let you down?
Yeah.
Has it let you down yet? Yeah. The young devotees go, yeah, it's let me down, but yeah. That's because you haven't seen anything yet. It's not letting you down yet. It will let you. Does it, Mahatma Prabhu, he's 70 plus. Is it letting you down, your body?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you're still very strong and healthy for your age, but it will let you down. This body lets you down. So deha, you can't rely on your body. Deha, apachya. It comes from the next one. Kalatra. What is kalatra? Kala means tummy, but what does, in this Sanskrit context, kalatra means? The wife, yeah. The wife, or for the wife it means the husband. They will let you down. Guaranteed. 100%. Please forgive me. But they will let you down. Because that is the nature of the material energy. It will disappoint you. It is guaranteed. Because the nature of the material energy cannot give you shelter. Only Krishna can give you shelter. Nothing else can give you shelter. So kalatra. Kalatra means your husband or your wife or the opposite sex. Which is what most people in this material world take shelter of. They take shelter of the opposite sex. But they will let you down. That is guaranteed. And then apacha. What is apacha? Children. Yeah, it means the offspring, though. Whatever comes from the wife or the husband. So they will let you down. Anyone have children here? No? Have they let you down? Ever? Yeah, see, they're good. They'll let you down. At the moment, they're good. But they have let you down. Have they given you any headaches in your life? Yeah, a lot. A lot. They give you a lot of headaches in your life. Unless they're pure devotees. Like Dini, she's a pure devotee. But some of them, they will give you satisfaction, but a lot of the time they will let you down. Just turn a little bit so you're not facing your back. So this is Adishu. Adishu means the paraphernalia which comes with the family life. Deha, apacha, kalatra means wife, children, your own body, and Adishu means all the paraphernalia. That will let you down also. Your home will let you down. Your car will let you down. Your computer will let you down. God forbid. Computers are fallible. I don't know computers very well. I'm pretty computer. Now I'm starting to learn things, but I'm still quite illiterate. But my observation is people spend more time trying to fix them than actually using them. It's like, you know, they're supposed to be like the answer to the world's problems, but as far as I can see, they're causing more problems than what they're fixing. So this is the nature of the material energy. It will let you. So atma, sanyas aswat, asat swapi. Asat means it is temporary. So anything which is temporary, asat, which means from this material world, it will let you down. It is fallible. It cannot give you shelter. Anything in this material world. And what is the foolishness? Pramata means madness. What is the foolishness of the conditioned souls? Every conditioned soul in this material world is trying to take shelter of things which can't give you shelter. Just like on the weekend, we had to go and buy our daughter a pair of shoes. So we went into one shopping mall place, and everyone's running around madly on a Sunday morning. You know, I want to buy this and I want to buy that, and you know, trying to take shelter of all these things, and there is no shelter there. What happiness can it give you? It only gives you distress. It's madness. Therefore, devotees, we take advantage of their madness, because they are mad. So we take advantage of that. So we go into those places where the madness is taking place. We distribute books to them. Right? Just like one devotee was distributing a book in the airport in the 1970s. And Prabhupada was very emphatic that we have to tell the truth when we distribute the books. Don't lie. Sometimes devotees, they start telling lies. But Prabhupada said, you must tell the truth when you distribute the book. So one person, because back in the 1970s, there was the oil crisis. So people were worried oil was running out. And oil will run out in due course of time. It hasn't done it yet, but it's 1970s. So it's a big problem. So one man, devotee, was selling the book in the airport, and one man said to the devotee, said, will this solve the oil crisis? And devotee said, yes. Right? So the man said, okay, so he paid him $10 or whatever and went off. So he went and sat in the airport, read the book for an hour, and then he came back to the devotee. He gave him the book, and he said, this doesn't say anything about the oil crisis. Right? So then they went back to Prabhupada that night, and Prabhupada was back at the temple, and Prabhupada said, how was the book distribution? And devotees said, you know, we were there, and we told them it solved the oil crisis. And Prabhupada was laughing. He said, yes, it does solve the oil crisis. But in his book, it doesn't specifically say oil crisis, you know, and how to solve it. But yes, it will. Of course it will solve the oil crisis. If you follow the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, it will solve the problem. Because what was actually the... what is the solution to the oil crisis? Yeah, very good. Ox power. Or stop using oil. That's the actual solution. And if you, I don't know if devotees, maybe some devotees are aware, some aren't, but it's in everything. Petroleum, right? Oil, it's in everything. It's in plastic. It's in every piece of plastic, right? Has oil in it, petroleum in it, right? So every piece of plastic. And what's plastic these days? Everything. No, that's plastic. Right? That's plastic. That's plastic. That's plastic. Right? Look, right? Everything is plastic. Right? Your brain is plastic. Your body is plastic. I'm actually serious. It's actually serious. I've got fillings which are plastic. Or maybe they're not plastic. They're like an enamel base or something like that. But, you know, a very good chance they're like a plastic kind of base to it. So everything, practically everything. All the clothes you wear, right, they have petroleum in them, right? Unless you're wearing the pure, like if you're wearing cotton, wool, or silk, or one of the pure, but everything else, acrylic, synthetic, nylon, all of those things, they're all produced and heavily made from petroleum. And they're very unhealthy, actually, when they touch your skin. You should always try to wear natural fibers as much as you can, because the other fibers, they harm you, those unnatural fibers. So, everything in this material world, it will give you problems. That is the nature of this material world. And the only shelter we have is Krishna. He is the Ashraya. So here in the Bhagavatam, it is saying that the actual shelter is the Bhagavatam. And this verse is the last verse in this chapter, which is a description of time. Ultimately, it's a description of creation, the first involved description of creation within the Bhagavatam. And then in this verse, it is saying, who is the source of everything? Sarva Karana Karanam, because we're talking about creation. Sarva Karana Karanam. Karanam means the source of all the other causes, the cause of all causes. That is Krishna. So the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam is for one point. The whole purpose of the Bhagavatam, the whole 18,000 verses that we have on this planet, they're for one point. To teach us to take shelter of Krishna. because there is no other shelter. He is the Sarva Karana Karana. Right now we're talking about creation. Who takes care of creation? Right? Mahavishnu. Right? The Purusha avatars. Right? Mahavishnu, two. Garbhadakshay Vishnu, two. Shiradakshay Vishnu. That is how creation takes place. But who is the cause of all of them? Right? The cause of Mahavishnu is Narayan. Right? And who is the cause of Narayan? Right? It is Sankarsana. And who is the cause of Sankarsana? It is Balaram. And who is the cause of Balaram? It is Krishna. And this is proven. It's actually, if you read the Bhagavatam in its whole, you have to read the whole thing. When you get to the last chapter that Prabhupada commented upon, purported. What is the last chapter that Prabhupada purported while he was on this planet? Yeah, 13th chapter. Now, what is the 13th chapter of the 10th canto? That's where Prabhupada finished. That's as far as he got. Yeah, Brahma Vimohana Lila. Vimohana. What does Mohan mean? Bewildered. What does Vimohan? Yeah, be bewildered. Totally. Like Brahma was like, you know, he was scared. Because he was dealing with something which is well beyond him. Same as Arjuna. When Arjuna saw Virat Rupa, you know, Arjuna said, show it to me. Krishna says, you really want to see it? Arjuna says, show it to me. And then he showed it, and Arjuna was, whoa. And Arjuna was powerful. I mean, he was powerful. But when he saw that, he just shrunk. And he said, no, stop. You know, just go back to what you know, just be what you used to be. You know, I don't want, you know, whoa, this is too much. So same as Brahma. Brahma was thinking, he looked at, it was actually Yogamaya. It was a pastime of Yogamaya that Acharya's mentioned. But he looks down and he sees they're having a picnic. Yeah? This boy is supposed to be God. Yeah? This is the Yuga avatar. Yeah? This is Vishnu. Yeah? He's having a picnic. Yeah? So I've got to work it out. Is he actually God or not? So he goes down, takes all the calves. Then the cowherd boys go to look for the calves. Sorry, Krishna goes to look for the calves, and then he comes and takes the cowherd boys. Right? So then he thought, I will test. Right? But then Krishna came back. Right? But Krishna knew everything that was going on simultaneously. So he's already expanded himself. Right? So Brahma puts everyone there, and he comes back, and everyone's still there. And he thinks, that's strange, I'll just put everyone there. Right? Then he goes back, oh, they're still there, and then he comes back, oh, they're still there as well. And he thought, so he's bewildered. And then suddenly all those boys there, they just turn into four-arm forms. And they show, I am actually Vishnu. And Shiva appears and like this. All the, and Brahma just shrunk. And he thought, oh, what am I dealing with? Right, I'm in trouble here. And then what happens in chapter 14? Huh? Yeah, he offers prayers. Huh? Because he realizes he's made a mistake. So then he goes and finds Krishna in the forest. Right? And Krishna's walking around the forest. And what's Krishna doing? He's still walking around the forest looking for his friends, and he's got yogurt in his left hand. Now what do we learn when we become devotees? Right? You only touch prasadam with your right hand. You never touch prasadam with your left hand. Right? It's offensive. Right? You see, Prabhupada, even when Prabhupada peeled a banana, he would pick it up with his right hand and peel it with his mouth. Right? He wouldn't even touch it with his left hand. You break your puris, you break your chapatis with your left. You don't use your left hand when you're taking prasad. You only use the right. So Krishna's sitting there with yogurt in his left hand. Right? And in between each finger, he has a piece of ginger. And does anyone remember what he has? Yeah, he has different things like that. So he's mixing it. So with his right hand, he's breaking up bits of gin, different things. He's mixing it with the yogurt and he's eating it. He's walking around the forest still looking for his friends. Right, and the calves, right? And then this person rolls up and falls on the ground, you know, with four heads, right? And then he stands up and he says, you are the source of everything. You are God himself. You know, I am an offender. And he starts, and then he goes through all these eloquent prayers, which we recite and offer, very famous prayers. And the whole time Krishna's just sitting here, he's just eating the yoga, and he's thinking, who's the guy? Seeing like, what's up with the guy with the heads? You know, it's like, and then he's speaking Sanskrit. You know, we speak bridge bus, he's speaking Sanskrit, and he's doing this whole thing, and he's laying on the ground. And so then Krishna just looks at him, and then after he finishes all the prayers, and Brahma's just waiting, and Krishna just goes, and he just walks off. He doesn't even say anything. He doesn't say, oh, you know, I bless you, I forgive you. And Krishna does, because he's in the mood of the cowherd boy. He just walks off. He just goes off into the forest looking for the cows. He's like, well, I don't know what's going on back there. It's like, So this is our Ashraya. Huh? Our Ashraya is Krishna in Vrindavan. Just as we see him right here, as Radha Balabha. Right? As a cowherd boy. This is how we worship him. This is how we dress him. This is how we feed him. He's a young cowherd boy. That is the source of everything. That's very hard to understand. That the source of everything is a cowherd boy. That's very hard, especially in this day and age in Kali Yuga, it's very hard for people to perceive and understand that. So in order to understand that, Prabhupada says you have to read the whole first 9 cantos systematically and thoroughly. And Prabhupada says at the end of the 9th canto, you should be a God-realized soul. And then when you read the 10th canto, you understand, yes, this is God. This is Him. And Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam says, and Prabhupada says in the first canto of the 3rd chapter, he says you will get all the benefit of Krishna's personal association by reading the Bhagavatam. It's the same as being with Krishna right now. When you read Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam, it's non-different. So this is our shelter. And the Bhagavatam is teaching us, take shelter of Krishna. That's the whole purport of the Bhagavatam. Krishna is the ultimate Ashraya. That is the name of the 10th canto. It is Ashraya. He is our shelter. Nothing in the material world can shelter us or satisfy us. So we'll stop here. We'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we discussed. Specifically, you mean devotees or non-devotees?
Like, yeah.
Devotees. Okay. And family members as well. Is that what you mean? Like that, yeah. Yeah, because the Bhagavatam teaches us... I'll explain it. You'll understand as we explain. The Bhagavatam teaches us that... Prabhupada specifically says in the second canto in one purport, he says the material world is a dream. It's not real. No. Which is psychologically disturbing. That this is all just a dream. It is. It's a dream. It's not real. Like, these bodies are not real. They're real in the sense they exist because, you know, the energy is real. But the forms disappear very quickly. And if we see all the bodies we've had so far in the material world, they all disappear very quickly. So the whole thing, it's just a dream that we're going through. And we just identify with the dream. So while we're in the dream, we need psychological assurance and shelter and safety. So it is good to have good relationships with your parents because you can get a lot of shelter from your parents in this world, from your siblings, from your brother, from your family. And as you said, ultimately from the devotees. You know, you have to have good relationship with the devotee. You have to have ashraya, or shelter from the devotees. From Krishna ultimately. Krishna is represented in the material world as the spiritual masters. So we take shelter. They're also our shelter. And then the devotees, they're our shelter. So we have to take shelter of the devotees, and we need to understand that the relationships are real. Even though this world is false, but those relationships are real, and Prabhupada says they continue in the spiritual world. So when we say Krishna, and by definition, Jiva Goswami, he explains when he's commenting on Anyabhilashita Shunyam, when he says Krishna Anushilanam, when he says Krishna, he said Krishna means Krishna and his devotees. So I didn't explain that really in the class, I didn't go into that, but our shelter being Krishna means Krishna and his devotees. It means Krishna, Guru, and Vaishnavas. Hari, Guru, Vaishnava, Bhagavata, Gita. Narottama Das Thakur writes. So we take shelter of Hari, Krishna, Guru, Vaishnava, and the Shastra, the Bhagavatam, the Gita, like that. So this is our Ashraya in this world. In the class I was saying just Krishna, but actually it's more broad than that. So we should understand it properly. So that's good. Thank you for making that. Do you want to add anything else? And even non-devotees, we can take shelter of non-devotees too. But you have to be careful. You have to be mature. Young devotees, they find that hard. Because, you know, when you're a new devotee, you find it hard to interface with the material energy. Because material energy just swallows you. Yeah, you know, it is. It's true. Because you come, like, I'm very close to my mother. But when I was a young devotee, I was only been a devotee for a couple of years, sometimes I go and distribute books close to where she lived. And then at the end of the day, I think, oh, my mum's only a few kilometers away, I should go and visit her. But then I wouldn't go. Because when I went there, I just felt it was too confronting. You know, I go into my old house, I go into my old bedroom, all my old things are still there, all my memory. And it was just too much for me. I couldn't interface with it. So sometimes I wouldn't go. And then mum would ring me and I'd say, oh, I was there today. And she'd say, why didn't you come and visit me? Whereas these days, I can just go and visit her. It doesn't bother me. And I actually like to visit her because she gives me a lot of shelter psychologically. No, she keeps me, you know, because mothers are very loving and warm. And, you know, so she gives me a lot of shelter, so that's good. And even though she is a devotee, but she, you know, she's not a devotee. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. It's a different tattva. Right? Jayadvaita Swami said it's called parent tattva. It's like Shiva tattva. He's not Vishnu and he's not a jiva. Something in between. So your parents are kind of like that. They're not devotees, but they are. And it's like, you know how they give birth to a devotee if they're not, but they don't act like them. And it's like, it's a mysterious tattva. Because Brahmananda Prabhu, he passed away last week. He's one of Prabhupada's first disciples. Brahmananda Prabhu passed away last week. Very powerful devotee. And when Prabhupada initiated him, his mother came to the sacrifice. And after the jagya, Brahmananda Prabhu and Gargamuni, they circumambulated Prabhupada, right? And then Prabhupada said, now circumambulate your mother. So they went and circumambulated their mother. And then Brahmananda Prabhu said that every time he visited his mother for the next 6 months in New York, he'd go sometimes and visit her, he would offer obeisances to her. So he'd ring the doorbell, right? And then she would open the door and he'd be laying there on the ground. Which is very strange. Don't do that to your mother. Yeah, if I did that to my mother now, she'd just think, yeah. She'd think, what are you? What is this? It's very strange. Don't do that to your mother. But the point is, respect your parents. And you can take shelter. You can take shelter. But you have to know how to take shelter as well. You don't take shelter of everything they say or do. Just like my mother, her first instruction to me, I came home, right? I was 19 years old, I came home and I said, Mum, I'm becoming a Hare Krishna. Right? And her first instruction was, do not do that. And I disobeyed her. I disobeyed her. And I said, well, that's what I'm going to do. You know, now she's like somewhat of a Hare Krishna herself. So now she's very happy with my life choice. But initially, she was not into it. So you have to understand how to deal with them. Follow them doesn't mean you follow everything, because they will not take you to Krishna ultimately. But you can take them. Does that clarify things? Or are you more confused? Or? It's okay.
Outside of ourselves or separate aside from Krishna, that everyone. we will not be desperate, because if we rely on only one person for shelter, and for example he dies or fails to help us, we are on deathbed and they can't help us, then we'll be desperate. But if you see Krishna, it doesn't matter, you know, if he will send someone else. When I go then, you know, like I look at next life, Krishna is with me all the time, so there is no fear if we are connected and see everything through Krishna. And sometimes all the children are not good, the wife is not good, this and this, and it doesn't create a right for me. You know, you have to live with someone, you have to learn to love these people. If you don't learn how to love those around you, you won't be able to love Krishna, and vice versa.
I hope I said that in the class. I hope my class, I didn't want my class to be, you know, everyone's my own, your family's my own. If that's the way it came across, that was my intention to be. I was trying to keep it. Was it balanced? I think it was fairly balanced. Yeah, it's true. Sometimes, that's fanaticism, to be like that. We should not be fanatical on that. We should love everyone in this material world as much as we can. Any other question? Yeah, so that's good. That's why the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas is there. Just like someone said to Prabhupada, what is better, being a Christian? Because, you know, in this Western world, the most prominent religion, like in Australia, for example, is Christianity. So Prabhupada said, the devotee said to Prabhupada, what is better, being a Christian or being a demigod worshipper in the Vedic system? And Prabhupada says, better to be a demigod worshipper. Because that, by following that Vedic system, eventually it will elevate you to the point where you'll understand Vaishnavism, ultimately. So it has its point. That's why the Karma Kanda section is there. Because that's why, you know, that's why Islam is there, that's why Christianity is there, that's why Judaism is there, that's why Hinduism is there, or, you know, the Vedic, that's why the Karma Kanda section is there. Because not everyone's ready to become a devotee yet. Like if you go down to Bourke Street Mall today, right, and grab a microphone and make an announcement to everyone. Everyone become devotees now. Everyone become a Hare Krishna. No one's going to do it. They're not ready for it. So you have to do everything gradually. That's why the Vedic system has these Karma Kanda section, to gradually elevate the people. So it has its place. But for us, we reject that because we've come to the ultimate conclusion. Vasudeva Savam Iti. Krishna is supreme. Is prasadam shelter? No, it's not. Of course it's shelter. Yeah, I mean, the whole Hare Krishna movement operates on one thing. Yeah, you take prasadam out, the whole thing stops. That's a fact. Prabhupada said, he was talking about 1966. 66 is when he started 26 Second Avenue, and devotees were coming. And Prabhupada, you read, there's a conversation he has, and Prabhupada said, they weren't coming for my lecture. He says that. He says, they weren't coming for my lecture. He said, they weren't coming for the chanting. Prabhupada says that. He said, they were coming for prasadam. Yeah. Because Prabhupada would cook the Sunday feast. Can you imagine? I mean, I asked Umapati Swami, he's a very, very old devotee, he was there in 1966, 67, and I asked him one time, we were in Jagannath Puri, and I said, Mara, I said, what was it like? You know, something that Prabhupada cooked. Because Prabhupada cooked the Sunday feast in 1966 and 67. It was Prabhupada, he cooked the whole feast. He cooked the feast, go and buy all the bhoga, cook the feast, give the class, lead the kirtan, serve the feast, right, and then clean everything up. And all the hippies are just going home like, oh. You know, Prabhupada did that. That's how ISKCON started. So I said to Maharaj, what was it like? And he said, I can't describe it. He said, it was like nothing from this world. You know, taking Prabhupada had cooked. One time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he walked in with Prabhupada, it was 68, I think it was, and he walked into the room, and Prabhupada used to have his little deities, Radha Govinda, and he walked in. It was after a class in San Francisco, and they walked in, and Prabhupada made a ladu, which he'd made, and offered to his deities, Radha Govinda. And then he gave the ladu to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and said, taste this. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj tasted it. And, you know, he tasted the ladu. And then Prabhupada said, what is it like? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, it is not from this world. And Prabhupada said, this recipe is from Mother Yashoda. So yes, prasadam is our shelter. The whole movement runs on prasadam. I run on prasadam. Don't tell anyone, but it's actually true. That's the reason I didn't become a Buddhist. Because the food is better here. I actually like Buddhism, but I like that the food is better here, so I stay here. Don't tell anyone. Do you experience that?
Yeah. So why is it so difficult? And like, generally speaking, what do you find when after a few years of doing it, and eventually it got easier to deal with it, just a matter of when?
No, because you have to purify. Savo Padi Vinimuktam. Tat Paratwina Nimala Rishikesha. Rishikesha Sevana Bhaktiya Vichate. So by devotional service you become purified. That's the whole process. And when you become purified, the material energy doesn't affect you as much. But it affects you in different ways. That's the point. Maya is still Maya. Right? We're all still in Maya. Right? But the grosser or the stronger or the more base kind of material conceptions and desires, they get purified as time goes by. So it just becomes easier. Like now I can just go and hang with my mother and I don't feel anything. I go back the next day. I used to go when I was a new devotee and I'd go and see her and then I'd come back and it took me a week to readjust again. It was like, oh my God. And then you get up in the morning chanting your japa and your mind, it just felt like this battle going on in your head. You know, it was like all the demons on one side and the devotees on one side. Like that. And now it's not like that. Now I just go and visit her and I come home and I get up in the morning and I just chant it. It's like, what's the point? Doesn't disturb as much. But it means that don't become too relaxed. And Prabhupada said that, always fear Maya. He said, if I have one criticism of the disciples, they do not fear Maya enough. Because Maya is powerful, so you never take her for granted. And Prabhupada said, he said, ISKCON, we come in like a needle, out like a plough. And Maya's the same. Maya comes in like a needle, you just give her like a little gap, she comes in and suddenly she takes everything. And Maya is so powerful, she can take any of us, anytime. That's how powerful. Like, I know myself, I have my price. You know, and she knows what the price is, right? And she knows I'm willing to pay it. And it's only by Krishna's mercy that she's not taking me out. Because if she wants me, she can just go, and I'll just leave, and I'll float off, and I'll get them through, and then I'll come around for Janmashtami, you know, with my moustache, and my dreadlocks, and I'll come into Janmashtami, and it's like, and that can easily happen. Easily that can happen. You know, it's not even hard for Maya to take me, because I know what my price is, she knows what it is, and the only reason she's not doing me is because Krishna's somehow interceding, saying, just don't give the guy too much of a hard time. Give him enough of a hard time that he understands he doesn't want to be here forever, but don't give him too much that he loses all his enthusiasm. So that's how she deals. So. Any other question?
Every single problem that is going on in the material world is because
lust is perverted prema. That's what Maharaj is writing. Prema means love of God. The definition of prema in Chaitanya Charitamrita is Krishnendriya Priti. Krishna Indriya. Krishna has Indriya, means senses. Prema means you want to give pleasure to Krishna's senses. Right? That's prema, that's love. You cook a nice offering and you offer it to Krishna and you want to give pleasure to his senses. So you make it as nice as you can. You don't even think, if you're a nice devotee, you don't even think of enjoying it. Right? It's all for Krishna. Krishna. And lust is described as Atmendriya, which means to satisfy Atma, me, myself. Indriya, my senses. That's lust. Right? So prema means it's for Krishna's senses. Lust means it's for my senses. So false ego, right, is the, because it is called false ego. So false ego is the mentality we have when we think things are for my senses, which is false. It's not true. Because originally, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, originally we were Krishna's servants. Or Jivara Swarupahoy Krishna and Nitya Das. Nitya Das means we're eternally Krishna's servants. So it's artificial. It's not right. It's not natural. It's natural to be a devotee. It's natural to serve Krishna. So where are we? We're somewhere in between, right? That's why we have, as we said in the class, Grihastha Ashram. Grihastha Ashram means it's somewhere in between. It's a license for sense gratification. Okay, you're not pure yet, but you're sincere. So you can have something in between. You know, because getting married or having kids, that's false ego. It's not real, because you're no one's mother or father. So it's false. It's a false ego. But Krishna, okay, you need that? You want that? Okay, I'll give it to you. In a regulated way. Right. So you can have that. So it's something in between. So that's where we are. But the goal is just for Krishna. That's the goal. Everything just for Krishna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's the Grihastha Acharya, he taught us that, okay, if you do have kids, the kids are Krishna's. If you do have a husband, it's Krishna's servant. If you do have a wife, she is Krishna's servant. That's how we should be seen. And eventually we have to see like that. At the moment, we don't see like that. That's why we have arguments in the Grihastha Ashram. If there's any friction going on between the husband and wife, that's because they're not seeing each other as Krishna's servant. Because when you see like that, there's no friction. Make sense? Any other question? Okay, Srila Prabhupada.